from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia. This is Cleats and Cuffy. Everything ultimate, from the field to the border.
Hello,
Mr. Graham.
And welcome to another episode of Cleats and Cufflinks. I'm Nick Darling, and I'm here today with my special guest, Kelsey Turner. And we're here, and you know, I get this wrong all the time, so I'm going to do it right here at the top correctly. This is episode 26. Those of you who've been paying attention will notice that that seems to be skipping one, but that's only because I constantly say the wrong number. First, I want to start with a little bit of news. Before we get to Kelsey here, I'm going to start with a little bit of news. We have a couple things going on right now that are really important. One, we are now looking for a full-time social media coordinator at Major League Ultimate. Some of you may have seen this already, and you know we've gotten some great applicants, but we're looking for some more. I want this to be a pretty competitive position for us because it's something that's obviously so important to what we do, to our business. And so basically what the job entails, managing all of the various social media accounts for Major League Ultimate, as well as working with social media coordinators on the team level to help them develop their team voice and to maintain their work at each of the individual cities. So we're looking for a full-time applicant. You know, preference is probably going to be given to someone who can come into work here at the office in Philadelphia. But we are certainly willing and able to look at applicants from elsewhere if they meet the criteria. And those are basically a really good understanding of social media across the board, including knowing what's coming up next in terms of platforms, the ability to create content with our other creative people here in the video department and in the web department, and also the ability to analyze performance and make recommendations based on what we've been doing in terms of adjusting our strategy and helping us move forward. You know, I'm hoping to find someone who's a really go-getter here. You know, that's what we need. We need someone who wants to take this, make this their own, and make the MLU social media jump to that next level. So if you're interested, you can send an email to work@mlultimate.com, include a cover letter that tells us a little bit about yourself and a resume, and we will get back to you promptly. The other piece of news that we have, Kelsey, is we have couple sales coming up this weekend. I don't know if you know, but it is actually it's Thanksgiving weekend.
I wasn't aware.
Thanksgiving weekend, and you know, as such, we are following the trends of many other people in the retail industry, and we're gonna have a couple of sales. We have a Black Friday sale, which is the, of course, Friday after Thanksgiving. It's become such a prominent holiday, and I believe that the whole term Black Friday came from the fact that this is a terrible day to go shopping. So if you don't want to go out and go shopping at the stores, go ahead and go online to mluShop.com, and we're going to give you 20% off just anything in the store. That's pretty much our Black Friday sale. You can use the code THANKS to get 20% off, because we want to say thank you to everybody out there for keeping with us all this time, and for purchasing our gear and coming to our games and watching our stuff. So use the code THANKS, get 20% off. And then more fun even than that, though, is going to be the Cyber Monday sale, which is, of course, the big sale the Monday after Thanksgiving, when all of the Amazons and the various other online retailers have their thing. We're going to be doing a sales
every 2 hours. A new themed sale
every 2 hours. So what kind of things are we looking at selling? Do you know? Have you looked at this?
Besides, we've got a disc sale plan. We've got accessory sales. We're going to have a Dress Like the Pro sale, which will include jerseys, friction gloves, and a disc, I believe.
I like that.
Yep.
So a little bundle stuff going on,
different bundles, different just individual items.
All right. And, of course, Dave Pennypacker sort of running the show behind the scenes. I'm just telling you right now, you buy a little bit of extra stuff, you focus on one team, you seem like a super fan. Dave's been known to throw some extra things in the box. Sometimes a personalized note. Which, you know,
more than once.
Often. I feel like we need to give Dave more work. So check out the sales Friday and Monday. Gonna have big sales going on in the shop. Gonna be moving through a lot of stuff. A couple new items coming up. We have a new disc we're gonna be announcing.
Yep.
We have some older gear that just resurfaced. I think we have some 2013 Property Of shirts that kind of just appeared out of nowhere. I think we'll do some seriously deep discounts on that stuff. So anyway, get out there, check it out. And you know, once you're once you're done with your Thanksgiving festivities, you know, spend some money. That's what you're
that's
supposed
what
to do.
That's about.
What it's all about, spending money. Okay, so anyway, Kelsey.
Nick.
Thank you for coming on Cleats and Cufflinks.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you to take some time out of your day. This is kind of an evolving role for you because, you know, you're our account manager. We'll get to that. We're going to talk about that soon, but you're spending more and more time in front of the camera these days, are you not?
Trying to. Becoming the next MLU star.
The next MLU star. What a wonderful idea. We should do this as a reality show. That'd be terrible. But we have you taking over my role. Big shoes to fill.
I don't think it'll be a problem.
On Speaking Ultimate. You're going to be taking over Speaking Ultimate full time. So, you've done a couple previously in Spanish.
Yes.
Which was fantastic, and we're hoping to continue that now that we have you here all the time and are able to really take advantage of that ability. Yeah, but you're also going to be taking over the English version.
Yeah,
and you know, are you seeing any big changes? Are you moving in any new directions? Anything you're doing with the Speaking Ultimate thing that I built up and made such a great and wonderful part of our content?
I think we're mostly retreating from the. As you put it, bombastically nerdy direction that you took
retreating
it in.
From
I
the
personally feel like it's pompous, so we're retreating to a more accessible and likable TV persona. It's in the works. We've got a lot to figure out.
I don't know about this. The word likable there. That suggests that perhaps
relatable.
I was unlikable. Is that what we're saying?
We'll go with relatable.
We're gonna retreat from this conversation. Is what we're gonna do. But anyway, we're looking forward to that. I think you're gonna do a great job there. And we have a lot of Ultimate terminology still to go through.
We do.
I was just doing some work formatting our rule book for the website, and there's a glossary of terms in there. And I had gotten to this point where I'm like, well, we're gonna run out of terms to define on Speaking Ultimate. Like, where are we gonna take that? A little segment next, and I realize we're not even close.
Nope.
We have plenty of time ahead of us. Plenty of time. All right. So you started working here more or less full time in June.
Yep.
And your official role has been that of the account manager.
Yes.
For the league, correct? That's the correct terminology. Is that what we're using?
It is account manager.
All right. So in that role, tell us a little bit about what that means.
Okay. Well, I work directly with the sales and partnership team, and after the partnership development team finishes a contract and has an agreement with one of our corporate sponsors, I go over this contract and I make sure that everything we have agreed to provide them and everything they have agreed to provide us is met. So I have to collect different logos, copy for online articles, and I have to make sure that we're posting on time. So I just tell everybody else to do their job, basically.
I like that. Yeah, it's something that I think, maybe people who aren't involved in this industry don't understand completely. But when you sign a partnership or sponsorship deal, there are certain services that you're providing in return. It's not simply the sponsor looking to have their brand associated with the MLU, to have a logo on something. There's actually a number of pretty significant activities that you're undertaking for that brand, much in the same way a creative agency might. So what are some of the things that we do? Like, what are some of the places that these brand activations take place?
So I broke it up into four specific activation categories, which are in-game activation, social activations on Facebook and Twitter. We have our website activations, which include articles as well as just a logo on the website.
Mm-hmm.
And then video/other. So because video activations require so much more effort on our creative part, they kind of get their own category.
Yeah, that makes some sense. And we have both kind of sort of stock stuff that we do, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can plays of the week, or you can put a sign on the field, or you can, and then we also do custom activations for people. And you know, that's something I get involved pretty heavily in terms of creating the idea, and then you have to make sure that people do it.
Right.
This is essentially what it comes
down
to.
That's pretty much what I do.
So we went through a lot of contracts last year, somewhere in the 30s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And basically you're taking each of these contracts and you're creating checklists. Like how many people are involved in actually getting these things activated? Like, how many different places or people. Oh, there you
Everyone
go.
Is involved. Okay. In both everybody in the office plays some part in making sure all of these activations happens, as well as everybody that's working in the stadiums in our markets, or specifically for a team in our market. So I went through, I sort of made my own personal Excel spreadsheet with these four different categories so that I had a visual understanding, everything in one place, keeping it all together for me. And then I went through and I used this project management system called MeisterTask.
I love MeisterTask, by the way. Yeah. Shout out to MeisterTask. love you guys.
And MeisterTask creates, you can organize it in different ways, but it is essentially a checklist. And I can assign certain tasks to different people in the office. We can communicate through these tasks, commenting, and then check them off when they're done.
Love it. And so in the long run, I mean, the payoff of all that work is, yes, we're living up to our contractual obligations, mm-hmm. but also the big thing that Kelsey does for us is she makes sure that we re-sign these people.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the big thing.
It's the ultimate goal.
It's the ultimate goal because, you know, over time, there's got to be some sort of recurring model in these sort of sponsorship things. You don't want to have to restart every season trying to sign new people. You right. want to be able to take your old deals, up them, which we've done on several occasions now. And I think that you're going to play a big part in making sure that that's successful going forward.
And a lot of that has to do with, I also, after the contract is initially signed, function as the main point of contact between our office and our partner's office. So if they have any problems, they come to me and then I can resolve them. Or if we're missing anything from them, I'm the one that they talk to.
And that's a big thing too.
Yeah.
The other thing is a two-way street. You know, all these deals, we call them partnership deals because they really are. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, it's a sponsorship deal, and yes, they're giving us money to do certain things to promote their brand and associate their brand with Ultimate, et cetera, but there's actually a significant portion where they have to give us stuff,
yes.
Creative assets like ads, logos, artwork for signage, copy, all that sort of stuff.
Goes on.
Yeah, so managing not only the acquisition of those assets, but the managing where those assets are and making mm-hmm. sure the right people have them at the right time is also a pretty significant part of what you have to do.
Yes.
We've also included you in some of the project management stuff we're doing.
You did. I was project manager for the championship game, which was...
That was the start of it.
It was a lot. It was quite a handful.
It was quite a handful. I remember talking to you... I think it was a couple of days ago, you came to me and you said, okay, so I'm managing these projects. You know, we have some web projects going on and some other stuff. He said, I'm managing these projects. What do I do if someone's not getting what they need to get done? Mm-hmm. Like, what's my recourse? I said, well, you know, first you got to go directly and talk to them, you know, remind them of why it's important, what the dependencies are. And then if that doesn't work, you can come ask me and I will step in and help you. If I'm not doing it, you should probably go find someone else to do it because I'm ignoring it.
Because
I'm just ignoring it. And I'm perfectly aware that it's there. Yeah. But it is good. You've been great. You've actually been a big help to me too in keeping me on task. So we're really happy to have you around for that capacity.
You say that now until I keep coming to you.
I do. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm not completely annoyed by you most of the time, but it's, you know, it's a good kind of annoyance.
I wouldn't be doing my job if you weren't annoyed.
Yeah, if that is actually a good way to judge this. If I ever find myself not annoyed with you, I'll come and check to make sure you're working. Which reminds me of something that I said for sure we were going to talk about this time. So we did a kind of survey of what people wanted in the office.
We did.
You know, and a lot of it was pretty standard stuff. We need more Post-it notes. We need, a better coffee maker or just more consistent access to coffee, et cetera, et cetera. Billy
snacks.
Sickles snacks.
Billy wanted snacks.
Really standing by the snacks thing, too. Like,
so I've now been appointed director of snacks by Billy.
I didn't know that.
Yes, I share my snacks in the office frequently.
I feel like I should know about these positions. Director of snacks. I mean, you have given me some chocolate here and there, which is very much appreciated. So I'll stand by the position.
All right.
You, though, had a very specific request.
I did.
You want to tell?
I requested a nap room. I would like to preface this by, on a video call, I asked if it was appropriate to take naps in the office, which Nick responded with, as long as you're not an ugly sleeper.
So I don't think that's what I said. I didn't.
It was close enough.
I think I worded it a little better than that.
Maybe you drool excessively when you sleep. You got to know what you look like when you sleep.
Yeah,
it might not be a face you want to present in the office.
You should be aware. And, you know, obviously you need to provide some sort of private space for people to take naps, should that be the thing. And also to be clear to everyone, we have actually a pretty pretty formal kind of work hours and work setup here. You know, everybody comes in at 9, we're done by 5, 5:30, and you get a lunch break. So you're not talking about napping at 10 in the morning when you're supposed to be on a conference call.
I nap during my lunch
breaks. Talking about lunch break napping opportunities that you want to be made available.
So, I take advantage. We have a full hour for lunch. Yep. So it doesn't take me an hour to eat my food. I'll eat it as fast or as slow as I want. And then usually the remainder of the time is spent curled in a chair out of everyone's way taking a nap.
And we have some good IKEA chairs for that purpose.
I think I'm the only one that fits in
them. We give a
shout
out to those IKEA chairs. Yeah, nobody else is very happy about those chairs. But we have them. And that's what's important.
Yeah.
All right, so you're working for Major League Ultimate now, right? You know, how do you end up here? Because there's people out there right now who are like, oh, this social media position, you know? But how did you end up here? When did you start playing Ultimate? I guess that's a starting question.
Well, my father is a PE teacher, so I've actually known how to throw a Frisbee since I was a little kid, like 7. We would always bring a Frisbee along family vacations. But I didn't start playing organized Ultimate until I went to college and got access to, my college had both a mixed team and a women's team. We just played one in the fall, one in the spring. So I got a good taste of both.
And where did you go to college?
I went to Goucher College in Baltimore.
Yes, that's right, Goucher College.
Yes,
my
nice and small.
My mother-in-law teaches there. Not teaches. She works in the admissions. Admissions.
She works in admissions. Okay.
Admissions. Administration.
So I have
admissions.
Your mother-in-law to thank for.
She may my entry have. She may college. Have gotten you in, and we'll give a shout out to Anne Desmarais. Thank you.
Thanks for my college
for
education.
For getting Kelsey in there, yeah, appreciate that. And actually, Paul, my brother-in-law, who content director for us, has been a huge part of where we are today. Graduate of Goucher, responsible for their.
He was part of the founding team. The
founding member of the Goucher Ultimate team. He also designed the disc golf course there, which I've played a few times.
I have not. After 4 years, I never
played
disc golf.
How did you not play the disc golf course there? It's a little 9-hole thing. It's fun. It's enjoyable. You throw it actually over the tennis courts.
Oh, I'm very well
aware. Which is where we're going next. Occasionally while people are playing tennis and occasionally very poorly.
Yep. Yeah. And we got a lot of disc golf discs on our tennis courts. We would have to close that hole when we had a match because we couldn't risk people throwing a disc in the middle of our court while we had a match going on.
Yeah, there's not a lot in the rules of tennis accounting for the intrusion of a disc golf disc.
No, nope.
Yeah.
I would say there's nothing.
Yeah, that's fair. So you played there, you played in college, and then, you know, you're here right afterward. Are you playing anywhere now? Are you doing anything club?
Yeah, I actually just joined a club. Had my first experience this summer with Independence.
Independence.
It's our first year of existence. I got to be part of it, which is great.
I like the name. Is it Independence, like like freedom? Or like dependence, like tax write-offs, but independence?
I would say like freedom.
Like freedom.
But sometimes we change it into Independance because we've got
a lot of
really talented dancers, and we're a big fan of the wobble.
I don't know what that means, but...
That's disappointing.
Okay. So you're playing with them. Co-ed women's?
It's a women's club.
Women's club.
Yeah, and I play summer league here, which is co-ed. Played my first fall league, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, it's great.
You're getting into the scene. I love it.
Finally. Took me 4 years.
Yeah, well. Well, there's a reason for that, though.
Yes.
That's what we're going to discuss next. There's a reason for that. You were a tennis player in college.
I was on the varsity tennis team at Goucher College.
And how long have you been playing tennis then? That is, must be forever.
I've been playing tennis for 10 years now.
Mm.
Yeah. Picked that up when I was in middle school. My father was a tennis coach, so I played all throughout high school, and then I played all 4 years of college.
Very cool. And so one of the things that we talked about, and this is what I wanted to get into here, is one of the things we talked about with tennis is how tennis is officiated. Because we often hear this parallel when people talk about Ultimate, because tennis is another sport where you see kind of a self-officiation thing come up. And we know that in Ultimate, on the recreational level, and to some extent on the club and college level where there aren't observers, you have this self-officiation thing going on. So how is tennis, let's start with how is tennis at the highest level officiated?
So at the highest level, which you'll see at the US Open or any of the major tour events, we'll have a linesman or a lines judge at every line across the baseline, every line on the court where you need to see if a ball is in or out.
So we're talking like one, two, three, four,
five
So five line judges.
Five line judges, and you have a chair umpire who sits up, keeps track of the score, calls any lets, calls any do-overs that needs to happen.
Isn't there a net person, too?
Not anymore.
There used to be,
There used to be somebody who sat with their finger on the net to feel if there was
a let. I remember that. That doesn't exist anymore?
It's automated now.
Yeah, of course
so
it is.
Just a loud beep goes off.
That's a shame, because that was my favorite person.
But don't worry, they kept there was a box where the lines or the net.
Yeah, you would hide in the little box because you could get.
So the box is still there because it provides good advertising space.
Yeah, well, obviously.
But there's nobody sitting on it.
Nobody in the box anymore. On the box.
On the box. I don't know.
Whatever they were. I always liked that. That was one of my favorite people. The person. It's such a weird job. So weirdly specific. All right, so you got six.
About six officials.
Six officials.
Working one match.
All right, so. Let's go to one of your average matches. You're in college. You're playing in a, regular college match. What do they call it? What do you call that? Many people, if you have another team comes and plays, is it just a match? So it's a bunch of matches that make up a match?
Yes. You have your individual match that makes up your team match.
Okay. Because, in track, there's different ways.
There's
it's a meet. Race or an event, right? But you just call them all matches because you just have no creativity in tennis.
Ouch.
I understand. No, it's fine. It's just tennis.
Okay.
We'll talk. I have some ideas. So in your normal one of your matches, what are we looking at in terms of officiation?
Unless it was a conference match, we're looking at nothing.
Nothing.
So zero. All throughout high school and all throughout college, I was in charge of calling my own line calls, keeping track of the score. If we had a disagreement about the score, whether a ball was in or out, I have to talk to my opponent about it and figure out amongst ourselves how we're going
to
proceed.
So even the score, you had to keep track of your own score.
Yeah.
So there could be disagreements about what the actual score was at a given point.
Which was frequent.
Well, it's a weird scoring system.
It's a weird scoring system, and because you have to call across the net before you serve, a lot of times people either aren't loud enough or just don't say the score. So people forget or get confused because it's not a sort of consistent acknowledgement of what the score is.
We play ping pong sometimes after work, and I will get angry at somebody I'm playing with if they don't say the score before they serve.
It's
I did the same thing. Oh, that's hard to believe. You're at a college level, and this is the situation. How in tennis... Because we've played a little bit. One time. I'll teach you some of those moves later.
Oh, great.
When you play, how difficult is it in your mind to be making the correct line calls? Because I find it really difficult, and I'm not playing when I play tennis at a very, shall we say, high speed.
Mm-hmm.
The balls aren't really coming that fast. How challenging is it to make those calls, do you think?
Initially it's really challenging. You get a lot more practice the more you play, and obviously the more accustomed you are to playing at a high speed, the better judgment you have about these calls. But if I go up against someone that serves at a speed that I'm really not used to, I will probably hit 70% of their out balls and play them back because I just can't tell. And I won't call a ball out unless I'm positive.
That makes sense. Maybe not the dominant way of looking at that, but...
depends on the area that you play tennis.
Yeah.
But.
So it's difficult. Yeah, obviously. So now you said something, having played a lot of matches without officiating assistance. Mm-hmm. You were telling me something that you will get this roaming official sometimes.
Right. During our conference matches, which is about six matches of the year. And then if you make it to the finals, it's more.
Okay.
We'll get one roaming official between four courts. So this person,
such a weird concept.
They will stand at the net post of one court that's in play and watch as the point unfolds. And if you disagree with an out ball call or you disagree with something that your opponent said, the only way you can get the official involved is to directly address them and say, was that ball out or was that ball in? And then they can make a call. But the chances of the official being on your court when you have an issue are pretty low because it's one official for four courts.
Now, is that official similar to... Because when I played club in 04 and 05, there were very limited observers in Club Ultimate. Is that official similar if there's a court where maybe there's too many disagreements that they'll spend an extra time there to make sure that they're mediating the situation?
Yes. I was at a major tournament once where this girl was just blatantly cheating, kept calling these balls out.
Yeah.
So an official was called over to stand at the court, and he was there, and then the girl blatantly cheated again, and the lines judge said, well, he's too far away. He couldn't really make a call whether it was in or out. He couldn't overrule the girl because the ball was too far away from him.
Because he's
one person looking at the baseline from the net.
Yeah, which is tough. I mean, yeah. And he's not, you know, not wrong. That's a very difficult call to make from there, yeah. So the other thing that you told me that I thought was really interesting is that explain to me how tennis players adapt as they get officials added to their games. What does that feel like? What does that mean to a tennis player? As that you know, you go from this sort of self-officiated kind of thing up to Serena Williams with eight officials and that sky camera thing going on. Like,
I would love to know how tennis players personally adapt to it, but I never made it to that Serena Williams level.
I've
never had six officials on my court. But I do certainly look at it as a privilege, because if you make it to that level where you're so good that you can have six officials per court, then you don't have to worry about anything except playing the ball and playing the next ball in, because the ball is moving so fast. Of course, you have experience and you have good judgment about whether it's in or out, but you're not dedicating all of your focus to just looking at that ball and if it touches the line. You have a line stretch to do that for you. You just focus on hitting it. And you don't have to worry about score either. Somebody else is totally taking care of that.
So all your sort of mental energy is now focused on the game you're playing.
Right.
You're not trying to do two jobs at once.
Right. You're just a tennis player.
Yeah, and I loved that when you told me that, because it felt so similar to how I looked at Ultimate when we started the MLU.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't, to be perfectly frank, I knew there would be some controversy about having refs, because I knew that this sport had this, you know, this thing about self-officiation that was really attached to it and was careful with.
Yeah.
But at the same time, for me, as a player, I thought the same way. Like, this is a privilege to now, instead of having to do two jobs, you get to do just the one that you're there for, the one that you've trained for, the one that you've worked so hard for,
right,
which is to go out and play the best game you can,
right,
and leave the job of taking care of the game to somebody else, you know. And I think that there's plenty of good reasons that that's not the way everybody feels about it. I'm totally fine with that. But that is the way I've always thought about it. Did you have, when you were at the kind of the college and high school level, was there any formal training about how to officiate a game?
Not necessarily, because mostly what you need to know to officiate your own tennis match is, can you see if the ball touched the line?
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty basic.
Yeah.
And just learning how to keep track of score. So you're not going to play the game of tennis. I mean, people play the game of tennis without knowing how to keep score, but
yeah,
you learn that on your own. And yes, you are taught that at some point, but beyond that, there's not much training that you need.
So it's not a terribly complex game in terms of what types of calls you could make, is
right,
what I say. Yeah.
There's no fouls because it's kind of an individual sport.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I always found it, I mean, that's the thing I found interesting about Ultimate. There was never any like formal instruction about how to make calls or assuring that people understood the rules, because you are technically doing the job of a referee, which you're also doing in tennis. But even aside from that, I love this idea that, you know, getting to have an official there, you could look at that as a privilege. You could look at that as an add-on to the game. And I think that's really, really interesting way to look at it. And I wonder if that idea is prevalent in tennis, if tennis players feel that way in general, or if that's, you know, are there people who are attached to the idea of making their own calls?
Absolutely not.
No, that doesn't know.
Absolutely not.
Are people annoyed that they have to do that?
People would love to have somebody else worry about the lines calls for them. Really difficult.
I get it. I also completely get why tennis has to do that. It's a ton of courts and only two players on each court.
Right.
You know, having an official for each match has got to be inordinately expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, you go play soccer, it's 22 people on a field and you need at least one referee. That's not that big a deal. But if you have 22 tennis players, you need 11.
Yeah.
And that's kind of
a lot.
That's an exception, yeah. All right, well, hey, we're kind of running low on time now, but I love this discussion. From what I understand, you're working on an editorial piece about this that we may see in the near future. That would be very cool, because I think that is I think it's an interesting topic to look at, and one I'm sure we'll come back to as we have many times previously. But until then, you have a Twitter account now. What is this Twitter account that you have?
It's MLU Kelsey.
MLU Kelsey. You have questions on tennis and its intersections with Ultimate. You have questions on account management. You have questions on just what it's like to work here at the MLU, you can reach out to her at MLU Kelsey. You can get me at Nick Darling on Twitter. You can also email us at cleatsandcufflinks@mlultimate.com or get Cleats Cufflinks on Twitter, at Cleats Cufflinks. So there's a lot of ways to reach us. Always looking for more questions. And again, looking for that social media job, it's work@mlultimate.com. We'd love to hear from you. But thank you, Kelsey, for being on the show.
It's great.
It was
to be
a lot
here.
Of fun. Yeah. And we'll do it again sometime. We'll get back
Probably.
To this. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. And we'll see you next time on Cleats and Cufflinks.